Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So this week on the podcast, we're actually going to be re-airing one of our favorite interviews with actually just one of our favorite people, Mike Idala. Mike is a mindset and performance coach who really just blows me away. And as a man who's always looking to grow in my mindset and my movement and the way that I treat myself, Mike is somebody who I can always look to for different tips and tricks. He truly exemplifies the growth in himself and is always looking to do that so he can continue to coach people into their most optimal mindset and performance in life. Mike truly is somebody who does the strength work. He does the mobility work. I mean, the guy can lift like a truck and can also do the splits and all sorts of crazy body movements. So he's definitely someone you should go check out on Instagram. We're going to throw some links in so you can find his website and also links to his coaching services. Please go check those out and really just enjoy this interview with Mike. It's really a great one.
I am so excited to have my brother, Mike, on the podcast. We have known each other now for 7 years.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
I think so. Mike and I met doing acro yoga together. We kind of slid into each other's DMs very friend-like because we were both in relationships and just started to hang out as friends, as explorers of movement, I would say. And I'm just so grateful that we've continued to have our friendship that we have and just continuing to know the person who you are and the heart that you have. I'm excited for people to be able to dive into this podcast in terms of your mind. Like, obviously, people can go check you out, Mike.Idala, on Instagram and see all the crazy physical things that you do with your body, from extreme challenging handstand type things to lifting the heaviest weights ever. Like, I don't even understand how you do it, but I'm way more interested in the deep dives of our conversations and the mindset that you have behind everything. So can you just quickly tell people like a little background of what you do, who you are?
Yeah, totally. Well, thanks so much for having me, guys. And I'm really excited to dive into this mindset stuff as well. I've been a coach for over a decade. That's the only job I've ever had. It started off as working with professional athletes, and then it went into teaching yoga. And now it's a real holistic approach to really helping people not only work out more efficiently and effectively, but also work in on some of these softer practices that are really what all of the physical training is all about. So that's what I currently do on my day-to-day now.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I know that you have a background a little bit in athletics too, if I'm correct. You played college football?
Yep, I played college football at a Division III school in New York. And then afterward, I mean, I've been an athlete my whole life, and I love just exploring all different avenues that can provide.
Definitely. And I like that kind of how you talked about you trained professional athletes kind of first and then got into this yoga bit. And especially as I was a college football athlete myself, what wanted to make you make that dive into yoga and exploring some different ways of training your body? Or did you already have a little bit of a yoga background before that?
Yes, I was fortunate to be able to work with the New York Jets and then help train guys for the NFL Combine, like work with the top athletes in the world when I was starting out. And what I was always interested in was the reason why people do things the way they do. And to be honest, eventually it kind of became boring for me to just help people get bigger, stronger, faster, get bigger contracts, stuff like that. And a heartbreak actually led me into yoga, where I was like, you know what? I heard about this yoga stuff. I want to go try. I know I need to slow things down, and walked into my first yoga class and was hooked ever since. And then as you know, some of you have might have practiced yoga know, really once you start going, you really start to feel yourself soften on the mat, and things that you might have not thought about before start to come up. And I'm a very inquisitive person, so I was addicted to that right off the bat.
What was that addiction that you were kind of, were you seeking something? And did it keep you almost addicted into a different kind of place, you know, like in terms of mindset, like, oh, I need more of this. I need more of this. Like, would you say that was a healthy addiction, or was it something that you were feeling like you were trying to fill in the blanks or fill in the holes within yourself?
Yeah. So I wasn't addicted in the way of like, I need to burn these calories or I need to do these poses. I was more addicted to learning about myself. And that's something that I've just been doing for a long time. And athletics has really shown me that through practice. Whereas you'll work on a skill, you'll fail at the skill, and then you come back and try something different the next time. And then you start to learn a little bit about yourself. And yoga is a great way because there's no one is perfect at yoga. That's why it drew me to it, was that there was always something to practice, whether it was a deeper connection with my breath or a different connection with maybe how I was gazing at the mat, or if my eyes were open or if they were closed, or different positions that I was in with my body. And I was addicted to learning.
So when you talk about yoga, I kind of mentioned, especially coming from a football background or people who do different types of physical training, what would you tell somebody when they say, oh, yoga, I don't do that? Or, you know, mobility work, yeah, that's just not my thing. What kind of things do you tell people to encourage them to be maybe open to trying some of these different things, because it might show us different things about our body and help us learn different things?
Yeah, I mean, I try to lead by example. So like, I like lifting, you know, 400 pounds over my head in the gym, and then doing a shavasana at the end of the workout, or like a little meditation in the corner. And usually that catches people's eye, because they're like, what are you doing, man? Like, you're lifting all this weight, but then what's this like airy fairy shit that you're doing over here? And that kind of gives me the in to be like, oh, this is why I can do that, because I can kind of focus. I try to relate something to that person or what their goals are or what they're trying to achieve. And then I can be like, oh, well, yoga or mobility or this is going to help you in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Like to be a mirror for those people to maybe see those openings. I love that.
How do you really get people to like set up goals based on mindset? Like, where do people start if they just look at a crazy skill, or they scroll through your page and they're like, I want to do that? Like, how do you think people should start to approach the mind and how we set up goals and expectations?
Yeah, great question. I like to start with language. So just how you're speaking with yourself, and then how you're speaking in everyday life, and taking ownership over the words that you use, and then how they show up in the actions of your life. And one of my favorite ways of doing this is by usually if someone's really anxious, or if they're constantly seeking outside of themselves for something else, they're using the word should or must a lot. And these are what I call gray words, where they don't really have, they're made up. Like, you're either reading it off the internet of, you know, I should be doing this, or I should be eating healthier, or I should be getting more sleep, drinking water, stretch, like whatever they are. And when you eliminate that word should, and you input the word want or don't want, you immediately gain ownership over your life and over the actions that you take. And that small shift can then insert into all different areas of your life.
Yeah, totally stole my next question, because that was, I think, the first time I ever met you, I heard you talk about that, and I wrote that down. I'm like, I love that. And since then, I've kind of been trying to avoid that myself. You know, it's a practice I've implemented. And another story about when you talk about language, the first time, actually, when we were in Denver training with you, one thing that you did, you went up to, I think it was a skill you were doing with Jen, a crazy acro skill that just wows me. And you said, all right, you're going to be up there. You're going to get on my arm. I'm going to pop you up. You're going to kick your legs. You know, there was a few cues that, and then we're going to nail it. And you guys went up and did it. And I'm like, gosh, that's so cool that you know, premonished that with the language and the energy. So the should die is one that I've always kind of gone back around to.
Yeah, the shitting is, it's so huge. I mean, your thoughts obviously really create your reality. And if you really believe in yourself and you have that self-esteem and you believe in someone else and you communicate that, you're investing in the bank account that is like your spirit. And then you can take that and put it into anything that you want. And like with Jen and I doing the acrobatics, it just happened to be that type of skill. But it was because of her own practice of self-work and introspection mixed with my own practice. Then we could link those two together and then do something pretty cool physically.
Yeah. And I think what I love about that as well is that should is like a judgment, you know, and it's like a comparison, like, oh, I should be doing this based on like what you said, someone else is saying, or you're predicting what someone else is thinking and you got that from something else, which is then a judgment on yourself. And I think when you put the power back into I want to or I choose to, there's no longer a judgment tied to that. That is based on solely your own choice within something rather than a judgment or a comparison of someone else.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, in today's world, like there are so many shoulds and so many people wanting to tell you what to do. And it can, if you're listening to that, it takes away from your own inherent like internal wisdom of really what is going to make you really happy. And I feel bad because I see so many people like seeking and searching and trying all of these things that other people are telling them to do. And the more time, like one of my biggest messages is to try to get people to just slow down and be quiet so that you can actually listen to what the universe, God, spirit, whatever you want to call it, has to really tell you.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think there are a lot of people out there that might start resonating with a message like this. And it may be the first time they've heard of something like that, right? So this whole should diet thing, it sounds easy. Let's replace should with I want or I choose. How do you approach clients and teach them how to start actually implementing something like this and holding themselves accountable to it?
Yeah, so I do like a should fast where you just don't use that word. And if you catch yourself using it, you journal about it. So you just keep a little journal with you and write down, okay, I shoulded when I decided to meet up with my friend, right? I was like, well, they were there for me at this time and I should be there now, even though I really want to, you know, just stay home and take a nap because I'm tired. I'm going to go do it anyway. And just starting to get people to become aware of when they're doing that and then working on allowing themselves really just allowing themselves to make the decision to insert want or choose into their life, which can be really hard because especially depending on where you're from, like Dom, I know you're from Minnesota, that selfish word, it's like the last thing you want to be called. And in a lot of ways, and this is a little bit, can be controversial, but in some aspects, I think being selfish is sometimes the most selfless thing you can do because you're being really clear and honest with that other person on what it is that you want or don't want to do.
100%. And I think opening up people to allowing them to journal, like people don't realize how impactful that can be. And when you just start to write, you'll start to discover things that you might not have realized, oh, this was actually coming from that, or I'm saying this because I am feeling like I need to, or should, exactly like you should be doing, you know? And I love one of my favorite lines in Friends is Phoebe, actually.
Classic.
I know. Here I go talking about Friends.
Friends references.
but what she does when Ross is like, oh, do you want to come help like pack up my stuff and help me move? And she's like, oh, I really wish I could, but I just don't want to. And like no shame, no hurt. Like everyone's like, okay, cool. And I'm like, I want to embody that more. I want to embody like, oh, I really, really wish I could be there for you. But right now I need to do this for me. You know, and you own that and it doesn't become a judgment. It's not a judgment on you. It's not a judgment from the other person. It is just, you know, your truth and you standing into your truth more to be respectful of yourself.
Yeah, totally. It is really, I love that you said that because at the end of the day, when you are shitting or when you're doing something you don't want to do, it's in direct opposition with you loving yourself or having that self-worth or that self-value. And the example I always like to use is, you know, if I invited you guys to my birthday party, but you really didn't want to come, I wouldn't want you to just come anyway and just like half-ass be there because you think you should be there. I'd want you to go do something else that you really wanted to do. And I think when people think about it that way, it's like one of the aspects that's getting a little bit lost in humanity is presence and like really being able to be there with someone. And a big reason for that is a lot of this shoulding and a lot of people feeling overwhelmed. And when you can really just try to clear away a bunch of that BS and get really dialed in with what it is that you're interested in and where and who and what you want to be, you know, people are going to gravitate towards that so much because you're really, you're a clear vessel for them. And that's something that is very attractive.
Yeah, I think that something that attracted me to wanting to spend more time and learn more about you and what you do is exactly that. You know, I saw somebody who was very true into who he was and was continuing to live that way, and that the people around you would just resonate with that as well. So that's something I appreciate about you. And kind of transitioning out of all this shoulding, I want to move into something that, you know, you mentioned a little bit when you dove into yoga was because getting out of a relationship, and something that I see more and more from you is just how vulnerable and open you're able to be with yourself and with others. And that's not easy for a lot of guys to do, especially guys that come from this more testosterone-driven world, whether it's from sports or from wherever that's coming from in our past. How did you navigate this journey of becoming more vulnerable with yourself and with other people, and then now coaching other people into that?
Yeah, I think I've always focused on trying to take the biggest, the most perspective that I could take. So like constantly zooming out on what is going to, like what's my goal and then what's going to be the fastest way that I can get to the goal. And I use a basketball analogy, whereas like I remember in high school, one of my friends missed like a game-winning layup and all of my teammates were getting on him like, how the heck could you miss that? It's the easiest shot, da-da-da, we just lost the game. And I like quickly gathered everyone in and I'm like, man, like this isn't going to help him have more confidence to make a layup the next time. Like all of this is just wasted energy towards the goal of trying to win a championship this season. So let's focus on like building each other up and understanding, obviously he wasn't trying to miss the layup. Like there wasn't anything malicious here. But the way that you can gain perspective on maybe the bigger picture is going to be crucial. And you know, with vulnerability, when you are really vulnerable with someone, then it's going to allow them to be vulnerable with you, and you guys are going to be able to connect better. And for all types of relationships, they're all built on how your connection and how that connection feels, and if people feel safe or if they feel supported. And being able to be vulnerable is a fast track to that true depthful connection.
One of the things that I really admired about you when we first met, even. And obviously I knew your relationship a little bit because I was also friends with who you were in a relationship with. So I got to see different aspects of it, which I thought was cool. And one of the things that I really admired about what you did and what you brought into that relationship was radical honesty. And I think with that radical honesty brings vulnerability, right? Because if I'm going to be radically honest about how I feel in different situations or how I view different situations or how I'm feeling in this moment, that is a very open place to be. So how do you kind of coach people into that when there's a lot of fear? There's a fear of judgment. There's fear of how someone will take it. There's fear of hurting someone's feelings. There's a lot of fear that comes with vulnerability. So how do you kind of coach someone into starting to create this within their life or their relationships?
Yeah, I think the reason that there's all of that fear is because at some level there is a lack of self-esteem or self-worth. So it's like, I'm going to be honest, this person's going to leave me, and then I don't know what I'm going to do because maybe I'm not okay being alone. So what I try and do is help people become okay with just who they are and just by themselves. And from there, you'll have developed a super solid foundation that you're only going to want to be around people that are going to support you on who you truly are. So the idea of radical honesty is to remove this like proverbial mask that we all wear because we want other people to like us. And when you really love yourself for who you are without the mask, then you're going to want other people to love who you are without the mask. And you're going to want to be able to share as vulnerably as possible with them. And you're going to want to see for who they truly are behind this, their own mask that they're putting out. And then there's a ton of different ways on communicating with tact and care and compassion for, you know, how to have those conversations. But the first step is just building your self-worth and your self-value up as much as you can.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people sometimes when they have the most difficulties, and I mean, speaking about the current state where a lot of people are spending time inside, we're kind of forced to face that elephant in the room and it might freak us out because we just had a lot of other things that may have been distracting us from doing that. So how does tapping into this open up, you know, someone's body or help them maybe feel better? Or does it even relate to tightness and pain and symptoms in the body otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I love that you asked that question, and it completely does. You know, our issues are in the tissues, as they say. So the classic example is like, you think of the big bodybuilder guy who just is doing tons of bench press and push-ups and just wants to like literally create a proverbial shield of muscle around his heart because he doesn't want to let anyone in there. So he builds the biggest chest and shoulders that he can. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I love push-ups and I love doing that, but it's the reason why you're doing these things that's really important. And I think when some people think about self-work, they expect us to like meditate once or journal once or take one bath and then like everything's healed and it's easy. And I like to use the analogy of working out. It's like, you know, the first time that you journal or you do meditation or you do breath work or you do some softer practice that's going to bring up some type of emotion, it's going to be really uncomfortable. You might feel silly. And it's just like the person who's going into the gym for the first time. They don't really know how to do the exercises. They might just be following some program. They're going to feel a little bit awkward. It takes a lot of practice to get comfortable in these type of things. And it's the same thing with these like working in practices. And when I usually explain that to people, it kind of helps take some pressure off and makes it a little bit easier to continue that marathon of work, which is really never ending.
And how does that relate into necessarily feeling that in the body? Like how can creating and stepping into these softer practices help first in what you feel within the body and then help you into your goals? Because if someone's like, well, I just want to get strong, so I don't understand how journaling and sitting and breathing is going to actually help me. Or on the flip side too, if like someone's like, well, I'm just in pain, I just need someone to rub it out and then I'll get better. Like, why do I need to do all these softer practices?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain areas of the body that are linked with certain emotions and certain things that are happening in your life. So a lot of times I'll work with people who don't really feel like they're on stable ground. They feel like the world's changing or they're not in a relationship they want or like the ground's slipping out from underneath them. And we'll do a lot of lower body like grounding exercises like squats or deadlifts or things like this. And it starts to bring up a lot of emotion because you're starting to push your body in a way that is activating some of these emotions. So to get back to your question, I think like you have to define what true strength really is for yourself. And, you know, when you're trying to get physically stronger, you're starting to push that edge as much as you can without going towards injury or going too far. And if you're not able to listen to your thoughts on where that edge is because you don't have a practice of listening to yourself and working on that through journaling, meditation, or whatever, then it's going to be harder to find where that edge is. And you're going to do what I call checking the boxes. Whereas you're like, I don't get why I can't do a handstand. Like I checked all the boxes, but you're missing the most important aspect of it, which is presence and focus. And you can't train those through just grinding away like a hamster on a treadmill. you have to really practice that by slowing down.
That is so beautiful.
And so when we start to implement different practices like this, like anything, it's not easy. And like you said, you know, we can check the boxes and say, hey, I did it for a week and it didn't work. Or some people may consider that they failed at this certain task, like, oh, I keep saying should and I can't get away from it. You know, how do you help people approach when they have perceivably failed at implementing these things to keep them on that track?
Yeah, well, I asked them, what did they fail at? And then just get really clear with what the goal is. Because the goal is usually to just start to become aware. And now, even if you're doing a should fast, for example, and you maybe use the word should a few times during the week, you've reached your goal because you're practicing your awareness of that. The goal isn't to just completely eliminate it no matter what, and you're never going to use it again. You've been using it for X amount of years that you've been alive, and now you're just going to change it in 1 week. It's like, that doesn't necessarily make the most sense. Like, that's not practical. So starting to become aware of it and then starting just to get a little bit better than you were the week before and then the week before that, and then you continue to grow. So you can kind of see yourself on a trajectory of going in the way that you want to go.
And you set up really crazy physical goals for yourself as well, which again, someone can just scroll through your page and see some of the things that you do. But you also talk about the different goals and challenges and usually physical goals that you want to achieve. So if someone is on that journey of achieving all those physical goals or different setting up different goals within their body, usually it's aesthetics, right? And they're feeling like they're failing. How do you coach people into riding those waves of failure? And what does that mean along the journey?
Let's see. There's a couple ways I want to go with this one. It's not, I try to get people to, if they're focused aesthetically, we try to focus on why they're focused aesthetically. And usually that reason is they think if they look a certain way, then they're going to have more confidence or more value, or they're going to attract someone, or they're going to feel better about themselves or whatever. And I just ask, and I do a lot of this thinking myself, like, is that the best way to gain confidence by just maybe having a six pack or whatever? And what I found is it's not. I know a lot of people with amazing bodies who are not happy at all. And I strive people to focus on how they feel. And then usually when you're focusing on how you feel, it doesn't matter what it is that you look like, because you're going to be feeling great. So, you know, that's a tougher concept because you can't look in the mirror and see how you feel, which is where the journaling comes in, because you can write it down and you can track that. You know, I felt really great today because I did X, Y, and Z. Not sure if that kind of go. It's kind of tough. Like, I don't like training people for aesthetics or even talking about it too much, just because I feel like it pushes people in a different direction. And I know that most people come in because they want to look better. But once they start to think about why they want to look better, and then is that the best way to go there, usually their goals start to change. And then we can start to get to the work that is going to really benefit them.
I think the main point is that you just get right back around to that why. Mm-hmm. And you start asking that why question. And I mean, I'm sure if it ever goes back around the aesthetics, you kind of redirect into the why. And mm-hmm. if we can keep people in that space, then it makes a lot more sense. And then the aesthetics makes you a lot more happy, if that ever is where you eventually get, because you probably achieved another goal too.
And even when we talk about that, like in as physical therapists too, when we talk about what people's goals are in terms of getting out of pain, I think it also goes back to, well, why do you want to get out of pain? Because some people, especially chronic pain, it becomes part of your life. And if you don't know what life looks like outside of the pain, or it's become wrapped into events and circumstances and people who support you, it could be a really hard thing. And us as physical therapists, we do the same thing, continuing to ask questions, continuing to try to dive a bit deeper. And I think hopefully people start to take that out of listening to your story and listening to how you coach people. But what do you kind of recommend that someone start with at least right now? Like say, okay, I haven't even been thinking about these little journaling practices or why that would be important. What do you recommend people just start with? Just start to, you know, whether it's steps, whether it's a practice, whether it is a mindset shift or whatever it may be, like where can someone start to dive into themselves?
Yeah. So I'll give two really practical things that you can do right off the bat. One would be a gratitude practice that I love. And I know that, you know, I probably say the word gratitude journal and you get a lot of eye rolls because there's so many of these, so much out there with that. But the one that I love is called the four W's. And you write down three things each day. And the four W's are what, when, well, and why. And the why is really critical because you start to gain ownership over the positive things in your life. So that's one that I like to do every day. And then the second one is taking a hot bath. And for me, taking a hot bath without my phone, maybe light some candles. And I come into the bath usually with a question on why. It's usually a why question. Like, why did I do the thing? Why did I do something today? Or why did I act this way? Or why did I snap at this person? And I just really let the hot water and the salt and everything kind of melt away all of my bullshit answers, more or less, that I'll try to give to it and try to get to the root question. And I just keep asking myself why and why and why and why. And the years just keep rewinding back and back and back and back. And then I start to develop a more awareness with the actions I do every day.
You know, this is what I always say, but I love that. And it's because I got my truth bumps when you said both of those things, because they very closely reflect personal practices of mine. And in the past week and a half or so, when things have gotten a bit crazy in life, I've been taking a hot bath every night with something or the other. And I turn the lights off and I play some soft music and I sit in there. And I would second that it has been so, so helpful for me to continue to dive into why. Mm-hmm. And keep asking those questions. How do I feel? Why? What do I want? Why? You know? So thank you so much for that. Yeah, you're bringing all the knowledge, man. This is amazing. So we have been so fortunate to have you on here. I would love to talk for another half an hour about all the things that you do, but we're going to kind of wrap up here. And I'd love to share where people can find out more about you, more about the programs and stuff that you have. Is there any sort of program that someone out there could join if they're interested in starting to dive in some of these things?
Yeah, totally. So I have a website. It's mikeidella.com. And I have an online handstand course if you want to learn handstand. I love teaching handstand because you can't just muscle your way through bouncing a handstand in the middle of the room. It forces you to slow down and confront a lot of these practices and kind of look at yourself. So there's a whole course on there. And then also have an online wellness app where people can log in, and it's $30 a month. And you get different journaling prompts each day and a lot of these wellness type practices. So it can be kind of hard because you don't really know where to start. But if I equate it to training programs, it's like, I'm going to give you the sets and the reps for your working in practices. And then I work one-on-one with people as well. And all that information's on that website.
Perfect. And we'll link all of that up, obviously, in the show notes so you guys can check that out more. But if you haven't already, like, go follow him, Mike.idella. It's just, you share so much wisdom through your posts as well. It's not just like, oh, cool, look at the things that he could do with his body, but it's a lot of wisdom that he's sharing in almost every single post. So I really appreciate what you're bringing as a man in this space. Mm-hmm. I know you and I get to have like deep dive, long conversations whenever we see each other. And I appreciate that you are truly have been an example for men in my life and friends in my life, and your support and your openness and your vulnerability. I just deep, deep appreciation for who you are, Mike, besides just the really cool handstands.
Yeah, the 315-pound overhead squat. One arm was pretty cool, too.
Thanks, guys. I love you both, and I see the same thing in both of you, and I'm so blessed and grateful that you're in my life.
Thank you. All right, guys, go check him out. Mike, we get to do another handstand competition when you get back. Really see who wins this time.
Let's do it.
All right, well, we'll talk to you soon. I'm sure I'll have you back on because there's just so much knowledge and wisdom that you hold. So thank you again, and I can't wait to chat soon.
Same here. Have a great day.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.